Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
Our concern about the outcome of the November election revolve more around the reaction to the election than the actual election itself.
You are about to enter the arena of real news and factual commentary on The Voice of Reason here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Now, here is your host for today's program, Ed Golly.
Gary Gibbons joining me in the Tan Talk studio today. And Gary, when we listen to the comments of Steve Bannon, you remember him?
Oh, yeah.
He was at the CPAC convention held over the weekend. Doesn't it kind of set the stage for a redo of the 2020 election, whereby Trump, realizing that the polls showed Biden was heavily favored to win, declared that the only way he could lose was if the election was stolen through fraud? Let's hear what Bannon said at the CPAC convention last weekend.
Today, in this very hall, the greatest president of the 20th and 21st century sat here and said he's a political dissident. He's persecuted. That is a mark upon our country because it's absolutely true, 100% true. Because he gave us 3 years of peace and prosperity before he was hit with a Chinese bioweapon. And they stole the 2020 election. Media, I want you to suck on this. I want the White House to suck on this. You lost in 2020. Donald Trump is the legitimate president of the United States.
Well, if anybody knows about stealing, it's Steve Bannon. He stole about $1 million from the Build the Wall Foundation, remember? And, of course, pardoned by Trump, he skated clean. I mean, that's awful. I mean, these people were really well-meaning donors. They really wanted to see that money go toward
wall fixed, you know, just like they said, well, let's get a bill in the Senate to give the president the money and the power that he needs to actually fix the border wall. And the Democrats laid down and let the Republicans essentially draft the bill, everything they wanted, a wish list for fixing the border, everything the Republicans ever dreamed of. And then Trump said, oh, wait a minute, what am I going to be able to talk about during the election?
That's right.
You know, we can't have that. You can't pass that bill. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see. I think he's going down to the border today. And
Both of them are.
I think that the union for the border patrols not happy with Trump, because they wanted that bill to pass. And it'll be interesting to see how he tries to deflect that.
Because it really does all ride on his shoulders. He's directing Mike Johnson how to run the House of Representatives.
Yeah, yeah.
Moscow Mitch taking a hike. That's
Moscow Mike, too. Yeah. You know, they're both listening to what Putin
McConnell's
has to say.
Down. I think the reason he's quitting is because nobody can understand what he's saying anymore.
Jeez, about time. My gosh. Oh. But, I mean, what a train wreck he's left behind. Three disastrous picks for the Supreme Court that overturned Roe and has just created oppression for half the country's population.
Yeah, when people say that Congress is broken, you can thank Mitch McConnell for that, because he saw what Newt Gingrich had started in the House, which is, you know, don't work with the other side. Don't compromise on anything. Obstruct, obstruct, obstruct. And then say, well, gee, the party in power that had the majority, you know, they couldn't get anything done, mm-hmm. so you got to vote them out.
Yeah.
And, you know, you would think that the American people would see through that, but apparently they don't, because it's been going on since the mid-90s. And then when McConnell came along, boy, he kicked it into high gear because the Senate has all these arcane rules, things like the filibuster that give the minority essentially a veto over everything. You can only, you know, if you don't have 60 votes to override a filibuster, then you're stuck, and the minority can put a hold on everything. And so he took that to new heights, and then when it was convenient for him, when he had the majority, he would simply change the rules.
Yeah.
You know, so he changed the rules on the filibuster for the Supreme Court so he could ram through those three justices.
Well,
the last of which was, you know, after he stopped Merrick Garland from even getting a hearing
for practically a year,
for nearly a year, according to him, it was because it was in the last year of the president, of a lame duck president, Obama, and you know, the people should be able to decide this. Well, fast forward 4 years later, when we're in the last 2 months of Trump's first term, and he was essentially a lame duck because he lost the next election, despite what Steve Bannon says, they rammed it through, and Barrett got confirmed a week before the election. People were already voting in states, if you want to follow his logic the first time around.
And they just have no shame about it.
No, zero.
None. That's just
no
unbelievable.
Conscience.
All they care about is the power to control things and stack the courts. And now we're seeing the results with yesterday's decision of a stacked court.
Yeah. I don't know when Donald Trump's birthday is, but he got a present, the biggest present of his life yesterday.
They must have been shooting off fireworks and launching, having balloon drops at Mar-a-Lago last night.
Yeah.
Because it's clear that there's no substantive reason of any kind for them to challenge what the appellate court said by a majority ruling. The decision they handed down was very carefully crafted and well-reasoned.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what did they need? Yeah. One page would have done it. No, the president is not above the law. I wonder if Joe Biden's telling SEAL Team 6 to stand by. are you kidding?
When the trial court Judge Chutkan ruled on that in December, the special counsel, Jack Smith, said he filed a motion with the Supreme Court in December saying, just go ahead and take this case now. It's of major import, and, you know, it has impact on the upcoming election, and, you know, please just take it now and hear it. They refused. All right? They made it go through the appeal of the D.C. Circuit. So that happened. They took, you know, a few weeks to render their decision. So then Trump, of course, appealed that. Did they, you know, they could have immediately taken the case and set it on their calendar. They waited 2.5 weeks. Most of the experts were saying, well, this probably means they're not going to accept certiorari. They're not going to take this case. And instead, they waited the 2.5 weeks. Then they said, oh, okay, we're going to expedite this. But expediting, you know, is in the eye of the beholder. And in this case, they decided to set it for April the 22nd for a hearing, which is the last week that this court can hear cases in this term. And so, who knows when they will issue a ruling. My prediction is they'll issue a ruling that says
the last week,
no man is above the law and all this stuff, but it will have, you know, delayed the case so much that it will not go to trial before the election. Yeah. You know, none of the cases that the special counsel is handling will go to trial before the election. So, you know, it's on, folks.
They're just doing this to buy time.
Yeah.
For the president.
No, they gave him the biggest present he could get, which was none of these have any substantive legal basis to change the law. You know, none of these arguments that he's made will hold water. And so all it's ever been about is delay. And guess what? The people that he gave the jobs to for life have said, okay, we'll do you a solid. We'll let you, you know, at least not have to be in court before you go and try to run for president again.
And, of course, it only requires 4 of the 9 to decide to hear it.
Right.
So we can pretty easily name them.
Yep.
Right? Clarence Thomas, Rapist Kavanaugh, Handmaiden Amy, and probably Alito. Right?
Alito. And, don't forget Gorsuch. He could be there too. You know.
Yeah, and probably not the Chief Justice, wouldn't you think?
I would hope not, but you know, nothing surprises me now. I mean, I'm so jaundiced about the fact that this court has turned into essentially a small 9-person legislature, because they are legislating from the bench and they are just getting started to do things that, you know, the people that put them there with their donations and their, you know,
their bribery
shenanigans, and Mitch McConnell, all the way from the Federalist Society to, you know, all the way down the line, have gotten what they wanted, and they're going to use it. They're going to use that power. They're they're not there to do, you know,
they're not
justice.
There to be a judicial deliberative body.
No, they're not going to quote unquote call balls and strikes. You know, everything's going to be a strike. And there will be no walks, and everything is going to get pushed through the way they want it.
But now, see, you said 9. It's more like 5 or possibly 6.
Right.
I mean,
the minority on the court, you know, they have no voice in any of this stuff. They're just getting railroaded. It is. Yeah, I said during the 2016 election to people who were not excited about Hillary Clinton, I said, the Supreme Court matters. There will be justices to appoint to the Supreme Court. And people went, you know, well, I don't know. I just don't like her. I don't like the Clintons. And I was like, okay, all right.
Yeah.
Well,
just wait.
How do you like not having reproductive rights for women? How do you like, you know, all of the things, all the fallout, the Alabama decision. Yeah. Oh, and they are about to, in this term, get rid of the Chevron deference doctrine, which is it's complicated, but essentially, Congress will pass a law, and then they will create an agency like the Environmental Protection Agency, or OSHA, you know, to pass rules for safety on the job, right?
Or protection of the environment.
Yeah, or any of those things, right?
Good.
And the law has previously been, and there's a Supreme Court case that says that courts will defer to the expertise of those agencies because they hire experts and you know, scientists work at the EPA, right? Scientists don't work on the Supreme Court and in most of the courts, the federal courts. Well, if they overturn that doctrine, that it's going to say that no longer will we defer to the agencies and the experts. Now it's all going to be decided in court. And, you know, because Mitch McConnell stacked the courts with all sorts of right-wing justices, judges, and then they've stacked the Supreme Court, they're going to be legislating on all of these things, and most of it's going to involve protection of the gun lobby, protection of fossil fuels, and protection of the big pharma. And all of those, follow the money. follow what their concerns are and their issues, and that's what's going to get approved.
And of course, now when these cases are brought, the plaintiffs will know how to cherry pick the judges.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They go right to those specific courts and those specific judges to get the rulings that they want, which we saw out in Texas with the Mifepristone decision.
Yes. Right? And that then all of these, you know, organizations with these great sounding names will come in and file these friends of the court briefs to tell the court how to rule, you know, and because all these people, you know, understand who they are and where the money is that's backing those groups, they know which side their bread is buttered on, and they go ahead and rule accordingly. I hate to say it, because it's turned our justice system into a kangaroo court, and you know it, and we are just getting started to see how bad it is. You know, if there was ever a time to consider packing the Supreme Court to add more justices, this is it. You know, because 9 is not in the Constitution. It's not a number that's fixed in stone. But if we want to try to do something to restore sanity in this country, we better start thinking about that seriously now.
That number has changed through the history of
the
country.
It has.
But not during our lifetime, not during the second half of the 20th century.
No, because they behaved themselves, and they've clearly shown now that they have no intention of doing that. They've put ideologues in there who have, you know, no sense of ethics and no conscience when it comes to, you know, they're going to do what they believe, not what the law is.
Well, their motive in this case is to get Trump back in the White House so that there will be more conservatives all over the federal benches in the country. They probably presume that the three liberals will be on another 4 years.
Yeah. Well,
but they still want to pack the federal benches.
They want to give him a chance to run. You know, that's clearly what this is about, and I predict they will eventually rule the same way that the other court did, that, you know, no man is above the law, et cetera, you know. But by the time they get around to saying that, it's going to be too late for anything to happen in any of those cases.
Yeah, but now if he does run and loses, and Bannon doesn't start a civil war over it, which he's apparently prone to doing.
They are fomenting violence. Yes.
Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah.
And they're going to organize it better this time. But then Trump would still ultimately need to stand trial for these issues. It doesn't make them go away unless
he wins. No, they don't go away. Right. They will not go away. So
now,
if he loses the election, he's ultimately going to be tried, and he's ultimately going to go to jail. I mean, there is no way that he avoids jail time from the documents case. But he got, again, the luck of the draw. He got Eileen Cannon as his judge. And that case is supposedly going to start in May, right? I mean, it's on the docket right now. But because the Supreme Court accepted certiorari yesterday, Eileen Cannon can now kick back and say, oh, well, we have to wait and see what the Supreme Court does, so I'm going to wait and take this case off the docket. But she will wait until, you know, closer to May 4th to make that decision, again, to kick the can down the road. But you know, the American people are deprived of the ability to hear the evidence that has been amassed against this man, and to you know, make an informed decision at the ballot box, you know.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter. You know, and they're doing what they said, you know, back to Steve Bannon. They're doing exactly what they did the last time around when the polls were bad and he was losing to Biden 6 months before the election. He started talking about fraud. Last week, he started talking about how if you have a mail-in ballot, it has to be fraudulent. Well, you know, The Florida GOP doesn't believe that. They've been pushing mail-in ballots for years, and they worked flawlessly here.
Yeah.
You know? Trump does have a criminal trial in New York that starts in March, that the Stormy Daniels case,
right.
You know, where he was paying a bribe to keep that news out of mm-hmm. out of the public awareness right before the election. And that's what he's being tried for there. And if he's convicted there, he will be a felon. And he won't be able to vote for himself in Florida.
Yeah. And of course, the governor could allow that, right? The governor could,
oh,
could
sure he will.
Cut him slack, right?
Sure he will.
That's what happened under Rip Off Rick.
Take one for the team.
They would review the cases of felons and decide whether or not they'd let them vote.
Yeah.
Again,
something that would, under Rick Scott, take years and years
sure.
and years, and they would never approve any of them. But I'm sure that it'll happen, over a weekend if that happened to Trump.
Yeah. And, of course, Christopher Krebs, was it, or Kraft, that was appointed by Donald Trump to monitor the 2020 election and announced that it was the cleanest election in the history of the country.
Ever.
And what are
they found a couple of people in the villages who voted twice. But other than that,
yeah.
And they voted for Trump.
But it's still essential for him to win to stay out of prison because he won't be able to get rid of either the case you just mentioned in New York, the bribing Daniels, or the case in Georgia. However, that could also end up being dropped over the issues that were brought against
because
the prosecutor.
Well, it depends on what the Supreme Court does with the this immunity defense.
So this could
because that he's raising the immunity defense everywhere, right?
Yeah.
If you're president, you have to have total immunity, and so he would raise that again, even if he lost the trial in Georgia, he would come back and appeal that because it's in a different federal circuit.
Okay.
He would appeal that to the 11th Circuit, and again, delay is his
sure
mantra.
It's interesting that his support goes up as the charges are levied against him from the Republicans and the MAGA crowd, but polls have shown that if he is convicted, it's expected that support would then drop for him.
Right. Yeah, and it's like the moderates that are still out there that are in the GOP are like, no, that if you're convicted, that's a bridge too far for me.
Well, he showed up at the CPAC convention last Saturday and predicted a dystopian America under a second Biden term, suggesting the nation will be beset by constant blackouts and rampant inflation, accompanied by spikes in illegal border crossings and foreign policy decisions that he said will lead to World War III. It's amazing that Trump asserts that we had peace when he was in power, and now we're at war. Well, the fact is we were in Afghanistan the entire time he was in power, and we were in a war there.
Yeah,
and then, now we're not at war with anybody.
Right, he was critical, and the right is very critical about the withdrawal from Afghanistan. That was all negotiated by Trump. He picked a date certain and said, this is when we're going to be out of there, and then handed it off and said, ha-ha, your turn.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
As if things would have gone any better.
And so it's no wonder that it was a disaster in pulling out, because you just don't telegraph stuff like that if you have any idea what you're doing, and he obviously didn't.
Yeah. Well, now Biden did extend that deadline into September, but and of course did same thing. Here's a cutoff date, and we're cutting out. Yeah. And I think, in fairness to Biden, his presumption was that with all the money we'd poured into that country and their military and the training and the equipment that we gave them, that they would at least continue to protect the major, the metropolitan areas of the country. And instead, they found out that, no, they aren't prepared to do anything to defend their country. They just drop their weapons and take off their uniforms and let the Taliban come in. And it caught, I think, probably all the military heads that were running that operation by complete surprise. I imagine none of them expected it either.
It was never.
Otherwise, they would have telegraphed that to him.
We should have learned from the Russian debacle in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had a neighbor who was a Marine who would always. This was in the middle of the Afghan War. You know, he would say to me rhetorically, well, you know what Afghanistan's going to look like after we've been there for 25 years? Afghanistan.
Yeah.
It doesn't change. It will never change.
And
the minute you leave, it goes right back to where it was.
Yeah.
There was no way it was going to ever change, you know. So we thank you, George W. Bush, for putting $7 trillion of debt on the national debt by that folly.
Yeah, well, that was Dick Cheney, who wanted to pump up profits for Halliburton and Blackstone, and because he was on the board, and he says, we don't care if we have to borrow all this money.
Halliburton was on the verge of bankruptcy before the Iraq War, and then they came out smelling like a rose.
Oh, you're not kidding.
When you charge $200 for a Coke. It's pretty good work if you can get it.
And all borrowed money. And then they turn around and blame the Democrats
all
for the deficit.
All off the books, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't, none of that was in the budget. It was all, extra.
Well, and then when Obama came in, he said, we've got to recognize this debt because we've got to pay it.
And
acknowledge that, this is part of our national debt.
We have to start putting it into the budget. Yeah.
But this is the same tactic that the Republicans get in power, they run up all the debt, and then when the Democrats come in, they say, oh, you got to stop all this reckless spending. We got to get these Democrats out of power. They're running us into debt, but they're the ones doing it.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
And the other thing I heard Trump say last week was, I'm going to give you a big tax cut again, which is, the two Santa Claus theory. What you just said. That, you got to get the Democrats out, and then, when we get back in, we'll give you things. Yeah. But they always give it to the wrong people. They always give it to the morbidly rich.
Yeah, the conservatives try to sell us on this idea that if we lower taxes, we'll get more revenue in the Treasury, and it's never worked. Where they call it the trickle-down theory, trickle being the operative word.
Right.
It has never worked.
No.
And we've seen that when W came in, baby Bush, big tax cut for the wealthy, started a war. It was the first time this country's ever gone to war without a tax hike and instead implemented a tax cut. And that started this massive deficit we had, not the Democrats. And then, of course, Trump came in, did the same thing. We were on the road to getting closer and closer to a balanced budget, and boom, here comes the tax cuts for the rich. And the reason is because rich people don't spend all the money that they have. That's why they're rich.
They couldn't I heard somebody say,
Uber rich can't.
We ought to outlaw billionaires, because you could never, ever spend $1 billion if you tried.
That's right.
You couldn't. But they don't want to spend it. They just want to accumulate more and more and have more and more power.
And have more and more power, and they're doing it.
How's that working for the average Joe out there?
Well, here's what Trump said. He says he continues to try to sell fear to get votes. If crooked Joe Biden and his thugs win in 2024, the worst is yet to come. Our country will go and sink to levels that were unimaginable. These are the stakes of this election. Our country is being destroyed, and the only thing standing between you and its obliteration is me. Well, you know, he's selling fear, right? Yeah.
Well, he did the same thing. Remember his speech at the GOP convention when he accepted the nomination the first time? It was, you know, only I can do, only I can fix all these things. And he didn't fix any of them. You know, all the things he said he was going to do, he didn't do them.
And, I know, except yet, for the tax cut.
And yet people somehow believe that he did wonderful things for them. Unless you're a billionaire, he did nothing for you.
And can you imagine if the Affordable Care Act had been repealed?
Yeah.
Look how many, I think something like 1.4 million people just in Florida used that system to get health care that they otherwise couldn't afford.
Yeah. You know, they gave Obamacare, if you will, a different name in Kentucky. And they called it Connect or something like that to connect you with health care. You know. And it was wildly popular, you know. And it was Obamacare with a different name. It was if you just take Obama's name off of it, all of a sudden it's like, wow, well, yeah, I do need health care.
Well, it was just like what's his name, the Mormon from
Romney.
Yeah, when he was governor of
Massachusetts.
And they implemented.
Yeah.
Essentially, universal health care. So when he was running for president, he said, oh, it's right for Massachusetts, but not for America. I wish he would have explained that to me, because I don't know why it's not right for me here in Florida, but if I live up in another state, it is. But he, as usual, never offered an explanation.
Well, he never explained how corporations are people either. You know, last time I checked, they don't breathe.
That's right. Well, you're listening to Gary Gibbons and me, Ed Golly, on the Voice of Reason here on the TAN Talk Radio Network. We're going to pause for some important messages, and then we'll return with more of the issues the conservatives never want you to hear about.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's TAN Talk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to TAN Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on TAN Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's TAN Talk Radio Network.
It's 10:38, time for Poll Watch, where we take a look at some of the statistics that affect our nation today. 18% of Americans, including one-third of Republicans, 32%, believe a conspiracy theory promoted by far-right influencers that pop superstar Taylor Swift is part of a covert government effort to re-elect Joe Biden this year. 57% of Republicans reject the conspiracy theory. Well, so there's a little sanity among them. But 11% said they aren't sure. And 73% of Americans who believe in the supposed Swift scheme also still think the 2020 election was rigged.
That's all they ever hear.
Yeah,
they hear it every day, either on Fox or through Steve Bannon or his show or the other the right wing media. It's stolen, stolen, stolen.
And yeah,
after a while, you ask them, tell me where, where did it happen? They can't tell you. They just know it.
I
feel it in my bones. Now.
And let's just circle back real quickly. We talked about Moscow Mitch, who is not leaving the Senate, but he's not going to be the leader. He doesn't leave till 2026. So that means somebody's going to be, somebody's, plural, are going to be running for that position of being the minority leader, hopefully for them, ultimately the majority leader. And we know that Ripoff Rick Scott ran for it. So undoubtedly, it's almost a certainty that he'll run again.
Yeah, I would think he would, but, you know, he's had a few unforced errors, you know. Remember he put out that 10-point plan for you know, what we really need to do to fix America, and one of them was to cut Medicare. And, you know, immediately Mitch and everybody else went, shut up. Yeah. What's wrong with you? You know, yeah, we want to do that, but you don't tell people we want to do that.
Well, that was the deal where every federal program would sunset every 5 years unless it was voted back in.
Yeah, that'll work. We can't even agree on what day it is, much less how to pass enabling legislation. They haven't passed a budget in a couple of years.
Do you think there's a possibility he was had his eye on the Social Security Act with that? That could
eventually sunset. It was everything. Yeah. It wasn't just, you know. And how about the Pentagon? Mm-hmm. You know, are you going to have hearings on budget hearings on all those things? Probably should, to figure out where the fraud and the waste is, but it's just totally unworkable.
It's hard to tell which governor was worse between Ripoff Rick and our current governor, Ron DeSantis, because Scott operated government in the basement. And now we see DeSantis is doing the same thing with respect to public records. It's our tax dollars that he doesn't want us to see how he's spending them.
Right. He loves to spend other people's money, but he doesn't like to tell you what he spent it on.
And so,
he wants to hide it. You know, the old three, the shell game.
Yeah.
You know, and it's happened again with the public records. You know, Florida, going back to the late 60s and early 70s, developed some of the most stringent public records laws in the country. You know, the Sunshine Law, we called it. Things are better if you can figure out what's happening in a public meeting, and things can't be discussed in private and then come out in public and simply, you know, do a perfunctory vote after you've already hashed things out behind closed doors. Those types of meetings between elected officials are illegal unless you notify the press and have a true public meeting. Well, the public records requests, when you want to find out what your government is doing and spending the money on, its citizens can simply send in a request to the government and say, you know, I want records on this. And it's state or local governments. You should be able to do that to find out what's going on. Mm-hmm. Over the years since DeSantis has been there, he has been keeping tabs on everything that's going out of the state government when it comes to public records requests. He now requires them to go through the governor's office for a review. So it's taking months or years to get things that you should be able to get in a matter of days. And they charge you for the, you know, putting the records together, and I get that. Because it could be overly burdensome to have, you know, lots of record requests, and you'd have people that's all they were able to do all day long. But he's taken it to the other end of the cliff, which is, I'm not going to give you anything on my travel records, for example. And I'm not going to tell you who was traveling with me on the state plane, burning the jet fuel that, you know, you and I paid for.
Right.
And we need to know who those people were.
While he was campaigning for president, which he's not supposed to do.
Right. And so the Washington Post said, enough's enough. We can't get these records. We're going to sue him. and we're going to get the records through discovery in court. Mm-hmm. And even then, you know, there were people at the Florida Department of Law Enforcement who were willing to turn over the records to them.
As they're supposed to.
Yeah. And DeSantis said, not so fast. You know, mm-hmm. we're gonna control what you can and can't see. And so it's a real problem. You know, why are you hiding things?
And those who have sought to comply with the law are finding that they're being denied promotions or even being thrown out of a job,
yep,
because they aren't team players. So he's taken this loyalty issue that Trump is perfecting into the state government.
Yeah. Well, he's always had a real close, you know, knit staff, and there are people that have to be vetted by his wife, and you yeah. know, they don't trust anybody, and so you see the same people circulating throughout, you know, all these different jobs.
Sure.
You know, so when they take over New College, the guy that used to be the governor's spokesperson is going down to give, you know, speeches about how great yeah. New College has become, and all of these, you know, wearing too many hats that don't really apply
yeah.
to that.
Speaking of New College, did you see that the American Association of University Professors has voted to sanction New College now, saying that its leaders have imposed an aggressively ideological agenda since taking over more than a year ago? Of course, that means propaganda. They're turning it into an indoctrination institution, right?
Yeah.
They pointed to the unprecedented politically motivated takeover marked by a complete departure from shared governance since Ron DeSantis appointed 6 new members to the school's board of trustees in January of last year. And then the association said the new board and administration have thoroughly restructured academic programs without meaningful faculty involvement and denied academic due process to multiple faculty members during their tenure applications and renewals. So this is really actually it's hurting the school, but they don't care. They have an agenda for this school to basically make it into another Hillsdale
yeah.
of the South.
Yeah.
The chairwoman of the faculty union says faculty are leaving New College and it's not the same place to work, and that's going to change the school. Well, of course, that's exactly what they've got in mind. It's not education anymore; it's indoctrination.
Yeah, and I, you feel sorry for the kids who went to the former New College because it was the way that it was,
mm-hmm.
and they've invested money in tuition for a year or two or maybe even three, and then here came the regime change, and you know, all of a sudden this place that you loved and wanted to get your degree from is now intolerable and hates you and,
yeah.
and wants you out and wants you to go into some sort of conversion therapy. And then, you know, all I want to do is graduate from the place that I signed up for 4 years ago and get my degree
yeah.
and leave, thank you. But no, now they're transferring to other schools, you know, because it's intolerable.
And
for
the
them.
Exodus of faculty is hardly limited to New College.
No, it's everywhere.
Becoming common throughout USF, Florida.
Yeah, USF. I know people out there who are, you know, in departments that are recruiting for folks to come here, and they don't want to be involved with education in Florida because it's such a top-down.
Politicized institution
yeah.
now, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, and you know, the friends who have said, no, come and help us fight this, are like, no, I don't want to do that, you know? Life's too short.
Yeah.
I want to go and do my job as a professor, and I don't want to have to look over my shoulder to see whether or not I'm going to jail for teaching the wrong material.
I remember when the conservatives started really jumping ugly on the teachers' unions of Florida, or the union, and painting the teachers as the bad guys because they want academic freedom, they want independence in their classrooms to teach the subjects the way they know they should be taught. I was just astonished. I thought I'd never see the teachers portrayed as the bad people by conservatives.
Yeah. Well, and last week DeSantis was saying, I think we really need to go back in and fix that bill where the book banning has gotten out of control. Said, it was never intended to be mm-hmm. what's happened, where people who don't have kids in the school, don't even have kids in school anywhere, can go into any county and file objections to the books that they're using in the schools. And I'm like, of course you knew that this could happen. What are you saying?
That was the whole point of it.
Yeah, that was it. This is what you wanted to do from day one. You cheered on Moms for Liberty to go and do all that stuff. They're your best friends, for God's sake.
Yeah,
so, it's...
It's the whole foundation of the voucher program, which is another thing that I predicted, that eventually vouchers would be made available to every student, regardless of the income of the family that he comes or
just
she comes from.
Just a giveaway to rich families who already had their kids in private school.
Yeah.
And that's what it's become.
It's essentially... I think structured to re-implement segregated education and to give the state more control over the curricula. They can bypass the teacher union because they don't need to hire teachers that even are credentialed
right.
at these schools. And of course the students aren't tested. They wouldn't dare allow that because it might show that, they aren't really getting this better education after all.
They're only learning what they want them to learn.
Yeah. And so if they show that they aren't a significant difference in education levels in the private schools, then how are they going to justify the voucher program? They do it by propagating the rumor that, everybody knows private education is always better. Well, it typically had been when we were growing up, because there were a few private schools where kids from wealthier families could go, and we knew they had better instructors. They had smaller classroom sizes. They got better results. But when you just do this in mass, you're basically doing the same thing you got with public education, but leaving a lot of programs out.
Corporately owned charter schools that, yep. They've consolidated the power and the ownership of those that, own, many of them owned by spouses of people in the legislature, who are passing these laws to allow the money to flow freely to all these institutions. It's grift after grift after grift, because there's a lot of money in education.
And when you make it a business, it's mandatory.
There are only two things in the
laws force the kid to go.
Two things in the Florida Constitution that the legislature has to do every year. One is balance a budget, and the second is fully fund education. That's the only thing in the Florida legislature mm-hmm. that says you have to fully fund it. Now there have been lawsuits filed as to whether or not they are doing that, and I, my opinion, they're not. They haven't for years. They've been starving education. They've been diverting the money to other things. They haven't been using remember the lottery? Lottery's going to be used solely for education. Then they diverted the other education dollars to other things to use the lottery money to fill in that gap. So, it's a cesspool in Tallahassee, and they are really, churning out some junk up there this year, too.
Is that right? Yeah. Well, we'll see. I got 2 weeks left in the session.
Yeah.
And
this is where all the really bad stuff starts to filter out and hit the ground.
Yesterday's Times had an item about the Davos World Economic Forum, and that's conducted every year in Switzerland, where these heads of all these major corporations and even governments are supposed to go and sort of decide how to steer the world's economies, right? And it's very expensive to get into that deal. It costs up to, I think, like $91,000 per person to get in. Well, some corporations send whole delegations there. They have so damn much money. But at this year's forum, a social justice organization known as Oxfam jumped in first. This organization works in 85 countries and is focused on fighting inequality to end poverty and injustice. So it says in their report, it says since 2020, the richest five men in the world have doubled their fortunes. During the same period, almost 5 billion people globally have become poorer. So that's over half the world's population. Hardship and hunger are a daily reality for many people worldwide. At current rates, it'll take 230 years to end poverty. But we could have our first trillionaire in 10 years. That's incomprehensible. I mean, a human brain can't comprehend a trillion of anything.
Yeah.
Even a billion when you come right down to it. The world's richest 1% own 43% of all global financial assets. And at the same time, of more than 1,600 of the world's largest and most influential companies, just 0.4%, which is less than half of 1% of those 1,600 companies, are publicly committed to paying their workers a living wage. And conditions are getting worse, not better, for millions of the world's poor. There are 4.8 billion people poorer than they were in 2019, most likely to be women, racialized people, marginalized groups in every society. Hundreds of millions of people are seeing their wages buy less each month and their prospects of a better future disappear. And yet on the other end, billionaires are now $3.3 trillion, or 34% richer than they were at the beginning of this decade, with their wealth growing three times as fast as the rate of inflation. Mexico City is starting to run out of water. Mexico City's built in the crater of a very big volcano. And as they pump water out of the aquifer, the city is actually sinking at a rate of 22 inches a year.
Wow.
Which, of course, is causing building foundations to crack and so on. As they pave more, build more buildings, and pave over riverbeds, there's less of any place that water can, rainwater, that is, during the rainy season,
could
actually, get down to the aquifer and restore it. So they're having to truck water in, and they're needing to bring it in through pipelines that are pretty, which is really inefficient because water is difficult to move. And there's a lot of leaks in the system that waste a lot of water. So it's reached a point where a lot of people, of course, the poorer people, just don't have water. They've got to buy a tank of water for $100 and live off that until it runs out. Where are they going to end up? Where are they going to go as they run out of water?
Yeah.
Well, they're going to come here. Where else can they go? You kidding me?
Until we run out, right?
Yeah, and yet in the world we live in, our own, even in our own country, we're structuring our corporations and our government for a transfer of wealth from poor to rich.
It's consolidating corporations, allowing more and more monopolies, and yet those companies never, as you said, they don't pay their workers a living wage.
Yeah,
at least in Germany. Corporations have to have a representation on their board of directors by employees of the company. What, you know, that you would say that here, they'd look at you like your hair was on fire.
And I know that in the past, the disparity of income between worker and manager was relatively low.
Yeah, when we were kids, you know, the CEOs of GM and they, you know, made a little bit more than the workers, but now it's exponentially more.
Our quote for today is from Alexander Hamilton. He said, "When you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything." Tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., join Paul Malloy for Freedom Works. And up next, we'll hear Joy on Paper with Patsy with a Z, following news from CBS. And we'll be back next Thursday for another edition of The Voice of Reason. So now, along with Gary Gibbons, I'm Ed Golly reminding you, if the statement seems a little too implausible to be true, don't believe it just because a conservative said it.
Make them prove it.